Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 119 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON State Section Director for the City of Philadelphia, State of Pennsylvania. Today, we are welcoming special guest Michelle Deschamps, longtime UFO researcher in Northern Ontario, Canada. We'll be talking about his 27 UFO sightings that he's had since the 1974, and his research into newspaper clipping archives and his new website that he has. We have a lot of information to go over today, so as we always like to say, strap on them seatbelts, we're going for a ride. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 119 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON State Section Director for the City of Philadelphia, State of Pennsylvania. Today, we are welcoming special guest Michelle Deschamps. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you, Jesse. Nice to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen some of your work, went over some of the research that you've been doing. You're an archivist. You're involved in a bunch of different aspects in the field. But I mean, your experiences started in 1974. I mean, you've had 27 UFO encounters. Were you involved? Did you get interested in the field before that, or was it the sightings that got you into the field?
Well, I grew up during the time when the Apollo missions were taking place, and in 1960 we moved to Sudbury from Northern Quebec in 1968. And a lot of the toys back then were moonshot related, you know, all the space missions and stuff. And I've always been interested in anything in the sky. Some years later, my mom gave me a photo it's an aerial photo of our original house where we lived at in Northern Quebec. And in the photo, you can actually see me at the age of 3.5 standing by the road. And when I saw that picture, I vaguely remembered looking up and seeing my first flying object for the first time. And that was that plane, that very same small plane that was taking a photo of the house.
Wow. How about that?
So I have that photo hanging on my wall in my living room in my one bedroom apartment. And it's like the first time I ever saw a flying object, and I have the photo. So I always had an interest in space and astronomy, but I suck at math and I suck at physics and all that stuff. I understand the basics, but anyways, I was starting to put together a material for a book, but not knowing how to write a book. I didn't know who to talk to. I eventually got word of a group in Toronto, and then MUFON, of course. I talked to Stanton Friedman, the late Stanton Friedman, and he said, well, with all the material, you should join MUFON. I mean, I'm not going to push you into it just because I'm one of the chairpersons. So I thought about it, and I said, okay. So then I found out that there was a branch of MUFON in Toronto, and I got invited down. I got to meet some of the people. There was an ESP psychic fair event that took place for a weekend, and I was being flown down by a local TV station down there to do a five-minute interview. And I wound up staying there for the whole weekend, and I got to meet the members of MUFON. I got to man our table for a while because there was like all these displays and tables. And then there was presentations in the room next door. And they had told me at the time even, and I just started out with the website basically, or even before that. And they said, well, you would have been one of the panelists instead of being a member of the audience. I said, well, that would have been cool. I had already transferred into text form the 350 newspaper clippings I had found in the Sudbury Star. I met a friend in 1994, Todd Frazier, who moved here from Kirkin Lake, which is up north. And I'm in Sudbury, Ontario, which is exactly about 4.5 hours north of Toronto. And so we happened to meet the same day I was doing research at the local reference library. And so we proceeded to look up for these clippings. And I did find 350 clippings. I had put them in text form and was about to write a book, but not knowing how to write a book, that's when it was suggested to me, well, then create a website. So the late Errol Bruce Knapp, who was a pirate radio legend and was the host of Strange Days Indeed, which was a UFO broadcast out of Toronto that ran for 11 years. He set me up with all the programs I needed. And sadly, I'm like old school. I'm using Dreamweaver 4, and it's probably, what, Dreamweaver 12 by now or something. It's a template maker. Anyways, I proceeded to create the website. And because I had so many newspaper articles already in text form, the website was up and running in about 2 weeks. I just did a lot of copying and pasting. And then I said to myself, well, what else would you want to see on the website that anybody who's not into UFOs would like to know? So I put myself in those shoes, and I decided to put a lot of information on the website that you won't find anywhere else. For instance, before I got permission, official permission from Linda Moulton Howe, for instance, I had taken a lot of the sketches of the different alien creatures that people had photographed and reported. Well, one photograph. I've actually cataloged 85 different species that have come to this planet, but were only seen once, maybe twice. And it includes one photograph taken by a state trooper in Falkville, Alabama in 1973. All the other sketches of aliens are all like drawings and stuff. And then I separated those from the repeat offenders, as I call them, the ones that perform the abductions, so that people would have a distinction between who comes here to do the abductions and who are the people that are just coming down here, taking a few samples here and there, and then they take off and they're never seen again. I had a late uncle who actually saw two small beings like that, and their vehicle was a ball of fire that just sat on the snow, and yet the physics about it was different because the snow was never melted down to the grass, and the aliens, the little beings, never left footprints in the snow. But yet my uncle remembers only looking at their lower part because one of the little beings was poking the snow with them, some kind of a stick or a probe, as if it had never seen snow before. So there's all these encounters and these reports I put together on the website. I also put a color palette where some of the UFO colors that people report on seeing on UFOs are so vivid, they're not the kind of colors that match up with any known aircraft.
Right.
Like you might have vivid blues, purples, pinks, reds, oranges. So I put a color palette. There's also a page where you have 8 criteria on how you can distinguish a UFO from a man-made object within 30 seconds. Depending how long you actually observe the object. And then when you do observe the object, you got to make sure you stay there as long as it takes so you can take down the direction of movement, the way it came in, the way it left, any peculiarities with it, any motion, movement, reaction to the environment. So I created a website that was very informative, and that you won't necessarily find similar information anyplace else.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty shocked that you were able to find all those newspaper clippings. Now, were they all from Northern Ontario or all over Canada?
Yeah, well, I went to the reference library. It was a spot where I started first, but then I found out that the Laurentian University had 4 additional newspapers from Northern Ontario on microfilm. So then I'd go there, and the coolest thing is, but it was kind of odd at the same time, you'd have a big banner report here in Sudbury, and then when you look up at the same date at a newspaper, let's say out at Kirkland Lake or Sault Ste. Marie or Timmins or North Bay, which North Bay was interesting, by the way, because we used to have it was a NORAD base back in the day, and in the 50s, they used to house nuclear missiles there. We used to have the Avro Arrow, the one jet that we ever came up with, but Diefenbaker wanted to have missiles instead, so that's why all our technologists and people moved to the States, and that's why the Americans are in the lead when it comes to jet fighters.
Okay.
But North Bay was one of the spots where I was surprised to find a lot of clippings in there, and they would correlate. If we'd have a big banner headline here, in Timmins, let's say, or North Bay, there'd be like a small write-up. And then vice versa. If I go to North Bay and I see a big front page headline about some UFO that swooped over the airbase in North Bay, then we'd have a little write-up in the Sudbury Star. And then sometimes it'd be a lot of reports from the States, like some of the famous encounters, like Pascagoula, Mississippi, 1973, with Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker.
Yep.
You'd have the Travis Walton encounter in two or three of the newspapers. So the stories made their way all the way up here. And so I collected all of those, and eventually I was surprised. I got to meet Travis Walton, got to ask a few questions there. I got to meet some of the big wigs when they used to have UFO conferences in Toronto until they're all canceled by the COVID pandemic.
Right.
So yeah, I kind of miss going there because Richard Dolan, I got to meet Richard Dolan before he was married, and he's married to a Canadian woman. And they live in Rochester, New York. And I'd see them almost every year for the 3-4 years that I did go and attended the conferences down in Toronto.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
So, yeah. So, we live in a pretty interesting area, too. Different areas will attract sightings, will attract UFOs for different reasons. Here we have, I think we're still considered the nickel capital of the world, I think after Russia. We used to have companies called Inco and Falconbridge. My dad worked for Falconbridge. Now it's Xstrata, and Inco is owned by the Brazilians, and it's called the Valet. That's what attracts UFOs here, the mine sites, the tailings ponds, which is usually what's left after they've done the refining of the metals. There's these ponds that could be toxic, but they're different. They're held in certain places where people don't have access, which is a good thing. But UFOs have been seen over tailings ponds. They've been seen at the mine sites. Now, if you go east, west of here towards Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, you'll come to a town called Blind River. Well, over there, they used to have a plant called the El Dorado Nuclear Refinery Plant, and they make radioactive pellets for the power stations down in Deep River and Chalk River on the way to Ottawa, down Highway 17. So there, the UFOs are attracted by anything related to nuclear, just like with the FDR, the USS FDR, used to be the only ship in the 40s that carried nuclear weapons. You have also, we had a radar base here that was made famous in 1975 because it was anything nuclear there. It was just because it was a very powerful radar station. But the other four installations that were visited by UFOs at the same time, from July leading up to November of 1975, there were four installations that were nuclear storage facilities in the States. There was Minot, North Dakota. There was Worth Smith in Michigan. There was one place in Maine. And I forget the other place where it was, but there was five installations altogether that were actually having UFO intrusions in 1975, in the fall of 75. And when I got the reports, I managed to get my friend Todd Frazier and I decided to file from Freedom of Information Act request to the National Archives to see if we can get some information. And the lady there said, well, why are you bothering filling that out when you can actually buy the microfilms? So I said, what? So I said, wow. How many are there? About five. How much are they? $25 each. I said, holy crap.
Yeah.
Because we're buying them. So I bought all five reels of microfilms. They're 16 millimeter, and they contain thousands and thousands and thousands of documents. And later on, I actually found a similar bundle of these documents. There was like initially 5,000, and then later on, I found another bundle that was 8,000 that included the original 5,000 that people had scanned, and they were placed online. Well, I said, well, there you go. I don't have to bother scanning documents because we have them. So I've put them on the website. You'll see an awful lot of documentation on the website. I've managed to get documents as well, or English-speaking publications out of Toronto, which are now owned by the Swedes in Sweden, and kind of got a little bit in a, not quite a legal entanglement, but we agreed to put a disclaimer and keep the ones that I had already downloaded, because I just came across this plain website that just looked white and had all these PDFs on there, but it didn't say who belonged to it. And then later on, I found out it's the Swedes that own that. But they said, well, keep the ones you have, stop downloading, and we agreed to do that. And it was a good thing because some of the publications I found a centerfold, two-page spread with a former OPP officer who just recently died, who was investigating another UFO landing trace case out of Manitoulin Island, separate from the one that I investigated in 1991. His was in the late 80s, I think the report says, 1982 or 86 or 7. And mine, the landing took place in mid-September 1990, but I was only able to go to the location or find a location in June of 91. And so I was the only civilian investigator to be at an actual UFO landing site. I actually contacted Ted Phillips, who at the time, the late Ted Phillips, who was the leading authority on physical trace cases. And also way back when in 94, before he passed away, I actually got to speak to Leonard Stringfield, who was the leading authority on crash retrievals of UFOs.
Yes.
So I got to talk to some of the biggest people in the UFO world. And my life has been like a long X-File episode without the season finale.
Well, that's great. You got to meet all them people. I mean, not everybody can say that, especially Leonard Stringfield, Stanton Friedman. I mean, those are some really big names in the field.
Yeah, yeah. And they should never be forgotten because they paved the way. I mean, even though Stanton never had a sighting, he envied a lot of people who did. Like, I know Bill Hamilton had over 100 sightings himself, but it's because of the location. He had a lot of sightings near Mount Shasta because I believe he lives in California. And it all depends where you live and what's there. If there's a lot of nuclear power plants or mine sites, like mining is a big thing over here. I mean, we actually live at a place where there was an asteroid impact many millions of years ago. And all of the mine sites are basically on the rim of the crater. So there's mines up in Timmins, Kirkland Lake, a lot of gold mines as well. But we mine nickel, cadmium, a bunch of other elements that are even more precious than nickel. And my dad worked in gold mines up in northern Quebec before moving here in 68. And like a lot of people did, because Sudbury was a big spot for mining. And obviously another big spot for UFOs to come and check, because if I were to explore a planet for the first time, first of all, you'd look for signs of pollution in the atmosphere, which would determine that there's a civilization there.
Right.
Then the next thing you do is you look for the natural resources or defense installations, because obviously you're going to have some kind of weaponization of places where you want to be on guard in case something from the outside comes in, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. So it's just typical. Most of these occupants are probably explorers that are just to collect samples. And yeah, there's a lot of people that have disappeared and never come back.
Right.
I mean, you have Friedrich Valentich, who disappeared in 1978 with a small Cessna off the coast of Australia after being circled by a UFO. You have Thomas Mantell, who chased a UFO in 1948 over Kentucky and died chasing it, going too high without being equipped with oxygen tanks.
Right, yep.
So you have all these incidences that took place where it's not a direct attack from the UFOs. I know the UFOs are being considered a threat, but the UFOs, yeah, it could be threatening if you see you're flying a plane and you see a UFO in front of you, but thank God there's been some collisions, but not the kinds that you'd expect, because the UFOs, they keep their distance while moving at a certain amount of speed. If the plane is flying at 500 miles an hour, the UFO is keeping pace. It's not necessarily going to collide in it. At least you'd hope that they know our technology is not like theirs.
Right.
You know, if we get a wing sheared off, the plane is going down, like it or not. But UFOs have the ability to do all kinds of things that we can't perform.
Absolutely.
And I have my doubts still that even if the UFOs were back engineered and man-made UFOs were made, the performance would not be the same.
Right. Absolutely.
No matter what. Because the technology you're talking about is possibly millions of years ahead. When you have a UFO that where a door opens up and then it shuts, you can't see the seam where the door ends and where the body starts. It's not like a car. When a car, you can see where the door opens, the door shuts, and you can still make the outline of where the door is.
Right.
But with UFOs, the technology is so amazing. It's like magic. And it doesn't matter how much money you put into back engineering. There's a lot of things that we may have in storage that we can't even use because we can't figure it out.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
You know,
we have about 2 minutes before the break, and I wanted to ask this question because I know how newspapers here report UFO sightings, but I wanted to ask you, did you find that the newspaper clippings that you found, did you find that they were honest in the reporting, or did you find that they kind of had a scrutiny about it when they were reporting it?
In the early days, the reporting was honest. You know, it was only in the later years that they had a tongue-in-cheek attitude in regards to whatever was being reported. Back in the olden days, it's almost like, the same thing with the microfilm reels that I bought. Some people got redacted versions. I don't have any redactions whatsoever. You have the person's name, their phone number, their addresses.
How about that?
And the same thing goes for the old UFO reports. They had people listing their address, their names. Nothing was blacked out. And nothing was really made fun of, but there are a whole collection of UFO articles that actually just speculated as to whether or not what the people saw was real, or if the people were imagining things. They say, well, maybe it was something wrong with the retina or some kind of eye problem. They had some explanations like that, or bottle caps. You know, when 47 took place, 1947 with Roswell. They said, well, maybe it wasn't crashed saucers, but just like bottle caps being produced out of a plant and they would go up the chimney. You know, a bottle cap is pretty small compared to a 48-foot craft.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, that's good to know, because I know that when they report here, you know, there's a lot of stigma. They try to make it a laughing factor. So it seems there was a little bit of a difference that there was actually some true reporting in Canada, which is great to know.
Yeah, well, it's early days. Anyway, it's the early days. Now right. It's like it's tongue in cheek. Maybe it depends. Anybody watches the congressional hearings, maybe it might change their attitude. But
right. All right. Well, let's go ahead and take our quick break. And when we come back, we can dive into a little bit more. We're going to take our break and we'll be back right after these messages. Hello, everybody. This is your host, Jesse P. I'm happy to announce coming up this year in 2024, on May 4th, is the Curiosities Festival, which will include speakers in the field of ufology, the paranormal, and Bigfoot. We'll also be having live performances throughout the day, live bands, food, activities, and more. Tickets will only be $5 a person, and it'll be from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. at night. Again, this is for the 2024 Curiosities Festival. Get this information over to our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
UFO Encounters Worldwide wants to hear from you. Have an experience or a sighting you want to share? Contact your host, Jesse Peake, at ufoencountersworldwide@gmail.com today.
This is your host, Jesse Peake. Check out our official website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Read up on UFO articles, including abductions, close encounters, sighting cases, megalithic structures, and more. Also, check out our new Facebook group. You'll get updates on guests every week, new events coming up, and our schedule of who we're going to have on in the future. Again, that's UFO Encounters Worldwide Facebook group, and our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com.
Have you always been curious about the unknown, the unexplainable? Do you find yourself intrigued by the mysterious and paranormal side of our world? Then Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is the podcast for you. Join in on an adventure into the world of the inexplicable and get insights from experienced researchers, investigators, and experts. Listen to mind-bending discussions and fascinating stories as Let's Find Out explores the strange, mysterious, and paranormal. Let's find out with co-host Diego. Is a unique and engaging podcast that uncovers the mysteries of the cryptic and unknown. With insightful interviews and discussions, they discover the very latest theories, discoveries, and investigations that may someday give us the final answer as to what may be behind the veil of reality. Available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Radio Public, TuneIn, and Rumble.
UFO Encounters Worldwide would like to announce our brand new home at the UNX Network. Listen to us every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear UFO Encounters Worldwide podcast. That's on the UNX Network. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of episode 119. Sitting down with special guest Michelle Duchant. So your website is called the Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study. Could you tell us how that got started? What people can expect when they go on there and some of the archives that you have on there as well?
Yeah, well, like I said before, I was I'd started with an idea for a book, but then the website seemed a little easier to create.
Right.
Although I now have 1,400 pages on there. and to make it easier for people, I mean, some people think, oh, maybe I should change it a little bit, but I've made it as easy as possible to navigate through. And I have to say that the most important pages are all in the left margin. You'll have celebrities and UFOs, like what they saw, if they saw anything, or comments they might have made. I've got scientists and UFOs, the military men and UFOs, police officers and UFOs in a section called Cops and Saucers. And I'd worked in collaboration with Gary Esseltine from the UK on that one.
Okay.
Somebody else was actually collecting a lot of reports, UFO reports made by police officers worldwide. I also have a documents page. The audio clips page is pretty cool because you'll see one of my former friends, we don't talk anymore, but his name is Don Campbell, and he has a lot of first, second, and third hand stories about some of the UFO happenings in Sudbury, but it's an audio. I've interviewed a lot of people, a couple, and their kids. There was even some Americans visiting, coming up all the way up here from Michigan to play ball. His son was playing ball. Baseball, and they had an encounter heading back home.
Oh, wow.
So I've interviewed a lot of people, a few pilots, retired police officers. So all the important pages are in the left margin on the website when you go there. Because I'm bilingual, there's either an entry point for English or French. Although because I keep telling my relatives that the English side is more extensive because of the terminology and the research that's been done. So that's why I haven't been able to translate all into the French side, but the English side is very, very predominant and very extensive. And people won't be disappointed. Now, like I mentioned to you before, I have a problem in locking on to my remote folder because I've changed the guts of my computer from a small tower to a larger tower. And sadly, the only thing I can't do right now is make corrections or delete all the dead links. You may come across some of those, but in most part, everything on there works. It works.
That's
you can
correct.
Access some of those pages, and there's some videos, must-see videos, and must-listen audio. So the website it's been up and running since 2007.
Awesome.
And because of the last 3.5 years, I had to leave it on the side because I became a freedom fighter. Until I can resume to go back on this. Now, you had some questions to me about the congressional hearings and something that pertains to that and my point of view on all of that.
Yeah, I wanted to get to your sightings first, and then we can get to the
sightings.
Because you had 27 UFO sightings since 1974, and some of those are on the website as well, correct?
Yeah, they go under my personal page in the left margin, personal sightings. I've had a lot of sightings. Some of them were purely by accident. I worked at a car dealership one time, and I just happened to be outside taking the snow off the car, and I caught something across the sky, and it was a beautiful disc with a wispy tail, just almost like a fish tail, just going side to side. But it was just like something dissipating from the beautiful oval that was just moving across the sky. But my most impressive sighting was in 1990, in October 1990. The weird thing is, like I said, it's a lot of coincidences, but I don't believe in coincidences. My old friend, Don Campbell, had lent me 3 Flying Saucer magazines from the late 60s, and I had gone to the dealership to photocopy them. And the same night that I was there, when I walked out to go to my car, I saw a bright light looking south towards Sudbury from the town of Hanmer, where I lived at the time, just 20 kilometers north of here from the city. And it looked as bright as it is when you look at Jupiter at its brightest. But the odd thing is, it was coming down, straight down, vertically. Well, actually, not vertically, but at an angle, because as it was coming down, it was becoming brighter. And I went back into the dealership, and I told one of the salesmen there, and he looked out, and he didn't even have to go outside. He could just look out the window, and he could see it. And he shrugged his shoulder and walked away. I said, well, I'll check it out. So I drove in my car. I got in my car. I go down. I could see it between the houses, and I stopped at the house, and I told my dad, there's a flying saucer flying between Sudbury and Hanmer. I got to get my binoculars. So my dad thought, well, I don't know what he thought, but he looked at me, and I took off running, and I got in my car, and I said, where the hell am I going to go? So I went to a neighboring street that leads into the bush, and I could see trees. Of course, there was no leaves because it was October, but I could see the object between the trees, and it was moving side to side, and it stopped, and then it blinked out. And then I looked at it again and said, where the hell did it go? And then all of a sudden it reappeared, but at a slight different location. So I said, well, okay, I'm in the woods. This is useless. I got to go somewhere higher and see if I can get a better view. So I thought of this hilltop where I proceeded to go. By the time I went there, I looked all over and I couldn't see the object. And of course, thank God the trees were bare of leaves, because as I panned from the west to the south, southeast, my binoculars were then trained on what we had at the time was the radar station, the Falcon Bridge radar base. And right there was an object that was a different color than the white egg color that I saw before. This was a pulsating reddish pink object that was irregularly pulsing, not quite like a heartbeat. And I later got myself a map. So where I was located was actually 4.5 miles exactly from the radar base. And now I wish I had gone half the distance. I would have been half as close to the object to see it. And I didn't see a ladder going down. I didn't see a beam of light coming down, but the object was hovering near the base. Huh. And through the binoculars, I could see that it was as wide as one of the particular sections of the base, which was exactly 40 feet by 40 feet, because we later snuck up on the hill, because the base had been abandoned since 86, 87. So I think the UFO was there to figure out why was it no longer operating. That was my speculation as to why the UFO was there that close, hovering near the base. And later on, when we measured the building, the particular cube-shaped building, which is no longer there, they flattened it all out recently. It was exactly 40 feet by 40 feet. So that's the estimate of the diameter of the object that I saw. Wow. And nobody else saw it. One kid actually called me and said he might have seen it, but then he just hung up because the ridicule factor was still there. A lot of people didn't want to report.
Right.
And that was my most famous sighting, other than the other stuff that I saw. But I saw my first triangular UFO just a year and a half ago. Oh, I was really? Coming home. I had my hands full of groceries, and I looked straight up. And if I hadn't looked up, I wouldn't have seen it because it was completely silent. It had 4 lights on it, but the 4th light was in the wrong position. It's really weird. It was like they had the typical 3 lights on each point, if that's what it was. But the 4th one was just off to the side. It was really weird location, and a brownish color too, not light that was casting light like you'd think. So the technology is so different and so weird. It's no wonder some people would like to not report sometimes, because it seems outlandish. You know, these objects are so far advanced, even like reproducing them, back engineering them. Good luck. That's all I gotta say.
So you had two sightings too that you actually caught videos of, correct?
Yeah, but very, very short. One was a daytime footage. And the thing with that one, the video is on the website. With some direction, I could tell people where to go and look for it. Hopefully it's not too hard to find. But it was a cigar shape, like almost like a Tic Tac, like the white Tic Tac, actually.
Okay.
And when it went, you could hear me almost curse on the video camera, because there was a big band of cloud. And it went behind the cloud. And when it came out the other side, it was spherical in shape. It's like it had changed shape, because I could see it from the side, because I tracked it with my binoculars after shutting down the camera, because the viewfinder was so small and I had trouble locating it. But you can see it when it reappears on the other side of the cloud. And I kept following it with binoculars until it went to the northwest. And that was the weirdest thing, too, because it looked like a little short cigar at first, white cigar. And then after passing through the cloud and came out the other side, it was a spherical light.
Wow.
So I was like, wow, that's weird.
Yeah, that's different.
And the nighttime one, well, I almost didn't see it, because you can't distinguish the difference between the rooftop of our house. I was outside, and this object flew between the moon and Jupiter. And it was orange. It was orange, almost looked like the Hale-Bopp comet, because it had a slight halo around it. But it was a very peachy orange in color. And it was, that was my nighttime sighting that I had. But again, seconds long. Like, it's disheartening sometimes, because they don't stay there as long as you'd expect.
Right.
And of course, nobody has any clear photos of a structured object sitting down on the ground with landing gears. Right. You know?
So have you seen a difference from the first sighting that you've had to the sightings that you've had most recently? Have you seen a change over time at all, or any differences or similarities that you can tell from?
Well, the shapes have changed, you know. I don't, like I said, I'm old school. I don't like this rebranding from UFO to UAP.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
If you go to my website, under UFOs, I actually have the original definition that was put out by Edward Ruppelt, who was the former head of the United States Air Force and author of the report on unidentified flying objects, 1956. The term flying saucer was used to describe all disc-shaped objects that were seen flashing through the sky at fantastic speeds. But before long, reports were made of objects other than discs, and these were also called flying saucers. Today, the words are popularly applied to anything seen in the sky that cannot be identified as a common everyday object. Thus, a flying saucer can be a formation of lights, a single light, a sphere, or any other shape, and it can be any color. Performance-wise, flying saucers can hover, go fast or slow, go high or low, turn 90-degree corners, and disappear almost instantaneously. Obviously, the term flying saucer is misleading when applied to objects of every conceivable shape and performance. For this reason, the military prefers the more general, if less colorful, name unidentified flying objects, UFO, pronounced UFO for short. That's why I stuck with that, because these objects, no matter what they are, whether they're small like a golf ball, obviously doesn't have anybody inside, could be a drone, could be something, that a monitor that takes photographs, they're still an object. They're not a phenomenon. A phenomenon I would place in the category of, let's say, we all of a sudden see a different cloud formation that we've never seen before. That would be a phenomenon. But these objects are objects. They're not necessarily structured objects, but they maneuver with intent and purpose, and that's not a phenomena. The rebranding is like, it could be misleading as well, because it's almost like making it sound like ethereal. Like a lot of researchers, while these Jacques Vallée, will say that a lot of these beings are interdimensional.
Right.
I'm saying when you've got beings that come into a house and they abduct people through a closed window, it's because they have the ability with technology to change their vibrational frequencies in order to pass through a solid wall.
Absolutely.
And then they re-solidify on the other side.
Absolutely.
It's technology that allows them to do that. It's not it's not because they're interdimensional. Because then if you place everything into the interdimensional realm, it's less tangible than the physicality that we bring to these objects when they leave physical traces when they land or when they crash.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So that, I agree.
Yeah. So that's why I don't go along with this rebranding and placing everybody in the realm of interdimensional. There's probably some possibilities that they can, if scientists are now looking at portals or time rifts or wormholes, there's possibility that UFOs can transfer from one medium using, you know, from one medium to another, or from let's say alternate universe to another, maybe.
Right.
In the same space that you and I occupy, there could be other beings right there, but we don't see them.
Right.
It all depends. Like somebody who did a documentary in I think it was in the 50s or 60s, where they used infrared cameras and normal cameras. And under the normal camera, you don't see anything in the sky. But under the infrared camera, there's an object hovering right there. So right. They could have objects cloaked, if you want to call it that, that could be around all the time. But unless we have infrared cameras to detect them and see them, which are there, they're just studying us. They're not invading us. You know, if there had been an invasion, they would have taken that place a long time ago when we were less weaponized than where we are now.
I agree. Absolutely. Yeah.
So sure. I think most of the races are benevolent. If there's anybody that is not benevolent, they're probably working for the other side, right. You know, the globalists or whatever.
Yep.
And God forbid, you know, because we're in a major war against humanity right now, and we need to win it real bad.
I did want to touch on this. You know, 2 years ago, we had the first hearings on UFOs here in the United States. Last year, we had whistleblowers go before and have their hearing. What is your thoughts on the hearings? Do you think it's heading in the right direction? Do you think that we're focusing on the right things? And where do you think we need to be at? With the phenomenon itself.
Well, whistleblowers I like is just that they seem to waffle a lot on the they know who's piloting these things. They know. See, but the thing is with this entire congressional hearings and also since the Tic Tac sightings, it's almost as if they're giving people who couldn't care less about UFOs before. It's almost like they're giving people the impression that the UFO phenomena only started in 2004. And it's only military. I gotta say that civilian sightings outnumber the military sightings by thousands.
Yes.
Or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. You know, talk to people who've actually had encounters. Now, I'm not talking about abductions because that's under regression, not all the time. People recall everything consciously a lot of times. But people who have seen the occupants next to a landed UFO as they're repairing it, and as soon as they get spotted, they pack up and leave. Look at Lonnie Zamora case, for instance. He was just a cop who was investigating what he thought was a dynamite shack that exploded,
right.
1964 in Socorro, New Mexico. And he sees an object shaped like an egg with two small occupants next to it. You know, talk to people like that. There's people to this day that are still alive that have actually witnessed these occupants, and they come in various shapes and sizes too. There's that guy I've depicted on my site, which you won't find anywhere else.
Right.
And it'll tell you these people are. It could be scientists. It could be explorers. You know, like we are, and we're always curious. You know.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It's the same thing, and the whistleblowers are not really coming forward with. Or forthcoming with this, that they know who's piloting them,
right.
and if they're calling them a threat, well, it's because I believe we have to share the airspace with them, and hopefully they know that our technology is not as advanced as theirs, so that they have to be careful when they're maneuvering around us. Is a UFO topic going to be used as a distraction, for instance, to what's really going on behind the scenes right now with? Yeah, with the farmers, because whoever is behind this thing that's happened in the last 3.5 years, they want to eradicate farming, and no farmers, no food, and the aliens are not going to interfere. They probably have a prime directive of non-interference. I believe the aliens. The reason why they're checking up on us, they're abducting some of us, is because one or two races had their hand in our creation, or at least in tweaking us over a period of 300,000 years, like Bob Lazar said, as he read the briefings. You know, there's a lot of information that could come out of that. A lot of people could speculate about that, but I believe that maybe one or two of the species had something to do. They don't know exactly who put our souls into our bodies, but they definitely tweaked us for whatever reason. Maybe one day we'll have trades with them or something. But I believe that we were tweaked by them for a certain amount of time, and they're just watching us to see how we develop, you know, year after year. And they're using the backside of the moon as a duck blind. They're using the oceans as a duck blind, just to keep watch on us younger space brothers, I guess, if you want to call it, or, you know, younger siblings or whatever.
Right.
But I don't know where this whistleblowing thing is going to take us to, but people better not take their eyes off the ball. Let's say and get too distracted with the subject.
Yeah, and I'm happy you said it. We got about 2 minutes left. I'm happy you said it because I've always been stating that it's funny how the government only goes back until the early 2000s, and they don't talk about anything that happened before then. So it's they're still trying to cover it up.
Times.
They're still covering it up, and they're still trying to control the narrative, you know?
And sighting has been going on since biblical times. I mean, you can see old art paintings and depicting UFOs in the sky. What else can they be? You know, that's, you look in the painting and it's like, wow, there's an object there that doesn't seems out of place.
That's right.
So, you know, and all the ancient structures all over the world that aren't explainable. Who built them? They built them in places where you can't even grow food.
Exactly.
You got Machu Picchu. You got structures that are just unbelievable. Maybe they used levitation. Maybe they used the help of UFO technology. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's fascinating. We live on a very interesting planet.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And we got to remember that. And I think we try to do all this exploration outside the planet when we need to be looking actually at what we already have here. You know,
exactly.
70% of the world has been unexplored. So it's like, let's go look at that, you know?
Exactly.
But we got about a minute left. Do you want to tell everybody where they can look at your work, where they can follow you at, if you want to give any information about how they can get a hold of you, anything you want to give out to anybody?
Yeah, well, my website is www.nouforce. That stands for Northern. It's the first letter of each word. Northern UFO and Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study. So Nouforce, as in Steve, .com. And you can email me from there. And my email is all lowercase. It's ufoman_1@hotmail.com.
Awesome. And I'll make sure I put the website in the description. So everybody listening, you guys can go down there and get that right away. And then, like you said, your email is on there. So if they want to get a hold of you, they can do that. Yeah, I want to thank you for coming on, Michelle, and really talking about all this stuff today, because you've touched on a lot of points that I've tried to talk about with people and try to get everybody to listen to about. And it seems like you're really on the ball with this, and I appreciate your time today and going over it all with us.
Well, the one reason I left MUFON is because MUFON has 70,000 plus case files that never saw the light of day. And to me, I would have used that information to go in schools or do something. I used to do public presentations at a local university, and I missed doing that because everything was shut down because of COVID BS. But it's there. The information is there. Enjoy it. And let's go forward.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on today, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 119. We'll be back next week with our special guest, Mary Rodwell, and if you guys are interested in the upcoming 2024 Curiosities Festival, you can get that information over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com, and we'll see you guys next week. So until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky. Well, I want to thank Michelle for coming on today and sharing all those UFO sightings that he's had since 1974. Some very fascinating encounters and sightings he's had, especially the two that he was able to catch on video. And also the great research he's done with the newspaper clippings and becoming an archivist with his website that he has. excellent resource. Take advantage of it if you're a UFO researcher. Again, thank you, Michelle, for coming on today and sharing all that with us. Next week, we're going to be welcoming special guest Mary Rodwell, longtime researcher and author. That should be a really great episode, so make sure you tune in for that. If you guys are looking for a new conference this year, we're having the 2024 Curiosities Festival. It's going to be speakers with the UFO field, paranormal, and Bigfoot. We're going to have vendors there. We're going to have live performances, live bands. It's going to be a full day of fun. Tickets are only $5. You can get all that information over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Please come and check it out. I hope to see you guys there, and we'll be back next week with another episode. So until then, remember to keep your eyes in the sky.